Welcome. This is Cameron McCune and Bob Dobbs with our dialogue about things I've created and things that Cameron created. And we're doing episode 56 today, September 15th, 2022. So we're in my my broadside, my pamphlet about Trump and what we didn't know about Trump. It's actually about the tech body, and we're on page 113. That's where we left off. And you go to the top there, you'll see the oral part of my dissertation. I'm talking, not so precise, and just trying to explain the precise quotes I had and the precise text I created. So I say, later in a book published in 1977, City as Classroom, McLuhan wrote, quote, a study of cliches, which when pushed to extremes, flip into archetypes and vice versa. So when he set up a dialectic, two things like figure ground, medium slash message, cliche slash archetype, he always eventually had to merge because that's what happens to the brothers in Finnegan's Wake. There are sections where you think you're reading about one of the twin brothers and he's being described as a woman and a very different character from the original Shem character. In the end, it was all scattered. Excuse me.
You okay?
Yeah, I had to take a drink.
Uh-huh.
I had to take a whiskey there. Okay, just a second. In the end, what was I saying?
You were reading the middle of the paragraph.
In the end, well, I'll read the previous sentence again.
Yeah.
There are sections where you think you're reading about one of the twin brothers, and he's being described as a woman and a very different character from the original Shem character. In the end, it was all scattered, and he didn't know who anybody was or what or what anybody was. That confusion is echoed by McLuhan. Now, that's interesting in light of what you said about the city's classroom. This is 70s confusion by McLuhan, but that's a side issue for a minute. That confusion is echoed by McLuhan saying in November 71 that he couldn't tell the difference between the medium and the message anymore. What you've got is, for a certain kind of literate person, the 60s and 70s were boring. He slash she didn't like pop culture. So I guess I'm talking about the literate person of the 60s and 70s. What you've got is, for a certain kind of literate person, the 60s and 70s were boring. He, she didn't like pop culture. Some would say it was all surface, in quotes, all surface, and no substance. But tribal people, quote, get off on anything. One could say that distracts them. They wouldn't consider it distraction, and that's a literate bias to say it is. Anything you want to say so yet?
Not really, but I would like to just briefly go back to the previous paragraph.
Okay.
Where you say McLuhan would make outrageous statements to get you thinking. He called that probing. I think that that's kind of an invention that was made, that idea is an invention that was made by Eric and others to try to explain why McLuhan at one point would say one thing and at another point would say another thing.
Mm-hmm.
They would say, well, that's McLuhan trying to get people thinking. It's his teaching technique. But I think that's they're trying to excuse something that doesn't need excusing. It needs to be thought about. It needs to be the contradictions and apparent confusion need to be thought into. If they're just taken as contradictions that McLuhan is using, that takes McLuhan in too surface a way. So I don't like that whole idea that McLuhan was trying to get people to think through his probing.
Yeah, no, that's a very interesting point. He does say in 1966 in New York Times, they say, McLuhan finally exposes himself or reveals himself. And he's under pressure and he's asked, he just spoke at the corporation, yeah. The Cannes Corporation or something. And he says, well, I'm just trying to get people to think. He said mm-hmm. that. Or they quote, who knows if he said it,
right.
But they're saying he said it. I'm
right,
thinking
but
of
then
that.
We have to, yeah, but there. When McLuhan says he's trying to get people to think, that can be taken in many, many different ways. And the idea that he says A at one moment and not A at another moment, and so we take that quote-unquote obvious contradiction and we think about that quote-unquote obvious contradiction. I think that's nonsense. But in 1966, that was when McLuhan's mind was not working very well, number one. And number two, if he was being coherent when he said that to the New York Times, then what we have to do is try to think about what he means by making people think, or at least prompting people to think. That's something very different from, looking for contradictions or something like that.
Yeah, in Mediums of Massage, he says as long as there's a willingness to not think but to contemplate what's going on,
mm-hmm.
people sometimes like to point that out, that it's not just conceptualizing. That
correct.
Not that meaning of think. So, okay, well, that's very interesting to question the cliche of probing. I mean, that's almost what he's known for, what I call the Madison Avenue view of McLuhan. He invented probing, you know?
Yeah. I agree with you that it's the Madison Avenue approach.
Yeah,
that's a good phrase for that.
Yeah, all that we know about McLuhan and that people work with is the Madison Avenue icon.
That's right. But we have to remember that the distinction between Madison Avenue and the Academy it falls away. So,
what falls away?
That distinction that Madison
yes.
Avenue and the Academy
yeah.
are basically the same thing.
Yep. So, okay. So we were saying there. Anything else you wanted? So you just wanted to point out about probing. So you did that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now we're down here. That confused, did that. They wouldn't consider it distraction, and that's a literate bias to say it is. The new technologies like the instant replay or Sony Walkman, any new technology today is a cliche probe. If you talk to computer experts, they'll say, quote, they haven't made a new invention in 50 years, unquote. You're working with the same template and just making them handier or tinier. All the technologies of the 20th century and into the 21st century are cliches in quotes. And McLuhan used to say that more invention happened in the 19th century. Many people would respond, no, they didn't invent as much as we invented. We had all kinds of abundant forms, cars, movies, everything, unquote. But they were cliche, and then I say, but they were cliche environments, repeating themselves, and were actually not new breakthroughs. Completely radical changes in technology is what happened in the 19th century. They weren't in a computer matrix and having variations of the same template being sold to them. You went from steam engine to telephone. A telephone, where did that come from? The whole electric environment was a big surprise. Then I go into Hugh Kenner, in his book The Mechanic Muse, talked about the period just before electricity was discovered. Kenner, are you familiar with this part? Do you know what Kenner talks about?
I'm familiar with Hugh Kenner, but I haven't read Hugh Kenner in 20 or 30 years.
Well, see if this sounds familiar. Kenner describes these elaborate, amazing, super-connected contraptions. You had pulleys and levers connecting things. That's visual space and kinetic space. They were useless, but looked pretty impressive for complicated connecting of levers, strings, and pulleys. Then the electric environment, the telegraph, comes in, and you're communicating. And you can't see what's doing the communication. That's a completely shocking switch from the visual mechanical contraptions. that it was the final hyper-connecting of things, you know?
And he talks about this when he's talking about Bucky Fuller.
Yeah.
He uses Fuller to talk about this kind of transition.
Right. Okay, so then I coined the phrase mythic stages. So I put that in quotes. Mythic stages are the environments that people lived in, and they kept getting obsolesced by newer media, newer environments, and people didn't fully understand what electricity was and how these environments worked. Traditionally, a myth was a story that talked about a complex process. To the literate person, it sounded like a lie or a fantasy. But you need to understand that myth summarizes, glosses over, integrates a complex process. It leaves out a lot of the details, the black and white chiaroscuro. And I put that in quotes, chiaroscuro. So we live mythically, that's in quotes. Most people like myself, we don't know how computers work or anything about them. We cope with all the information in the news that comes at us as we come up with a slogan about, for example, Trump's an idiot. That's how we sum the day's news. Trump's an idiot. And then I go, and that covers 2 weeks' worth of stories. That's mythic, I say. Well, that's interesting I say that. That's a mythic process. Forgot about this point. It doesn't mean it's false. It means it's a complex implosion into a suitable capsule, encapsulation. But as the environments unfolded and changed, each phase was a mythic stage. It's an environment that you leapt off of, that you leapt off of. If you look up the tetrad for the credit card in Laws of Media, it talks about the global theater. What is the stage of this theater? And I'm asking that rhetorically because the answer is in the book, in the tetrad. The stage is the credit card. The credit card allows you to hop from one technological culture to another, from one mythic stage to another. So the stage, it does not look like a stage. It looks like a credit card, which is an electronic, and they have in quotes, an electronic pulse grabber. One slices it through, and it allows something. It slides it through, and it allows something. So that's an interesting bunch of stuff there.
Absolutely. I don't know if you remember, but I think in the last conversation we had, and maybe in the preceding one as well, I've been talking about shortcuts.
Yes.
And how all technologies are shortcuts, which allow much greater efficiency or much greater speed or something, but they always leave stuff out. So there's, the way up and the way down is the law that rules all of this stuff. What you're talking about here as
a mythic stage is a shortcut.
Absolutely.
I see. Yeah. That's neat.
And we always are living one.
Yeah. So
not yet. But that's an interesting take on death, right? If human beings are the beings that live through shortcuts, then the inevitable end is death.
Yeah, that's the final shortcut?
Yeah.
The mythic stage. The electronic pulse grabber.
That's right. So on this reading that we're doing, when you're born, you have a certain amount of credit. And that can be called your credit card.
Yes.
And when the credit card runs out, or becomes invalid, or when the date doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, you're so obsolete, so out of tune, so out of date, you're tossed aside.
That's it.
Or you leap off. You leap.
Yeah.
Okay, so then I juxtapose a good quote from the cover sleeve on the back of Take Today, The Executive's Dropout, 1972. So I say this. Or I quote McLuhan and Barry Nevitt. Half the world today is engaged in keeping the other half under surveillance, and under surveillance is in quotes. This, in fact, is the hang-up of the age of software and information.
Yeah.
Software in quotes.
Since 1972, of course, you could no longer say half the world. You'd have to say that all of the world is engaged in keeping the rest.
Everybody's keeping everybody else. Everybody is surveilling.
Right.
Everybody else.
Correct.
Yeah, one to many, many to one. So In the preceding hardware age, and that's in quotes, the haves, that's in quotes, of the world had kept the have-nots, in quotes, under surveillance, in quotes. Very interesting how they use the quotes here. In the preceding hardware age, the haves of the world had kept the have-nots under surveillance. This old beat for flatfoots has now been relegated to the world of popular entertainment. Then in italics, the police state is now a work of art, a bureaucratic ballet of undulated sirens. That is a way of saying that the espionage activities of our multitudinous manhunters and crediting agencies, crediting in quotes, are not only archaic, but redundant and irrelevant. Now, that's where he does say it right here. It all goes into the popular entertainment, you know, Mission Impossible, Spy versus Spy, and every other show for the last 60 years. It's this surveillance as obsolete activity, and therefore it's a pastime as art form. So what is going on? You know, if that's people's worst fears about 1984 is just a work of art, then where we're at is really an important vision McLuhan had about actually how, quote, liberated, autonomous, I don't know if you would say post-human or para-human, that people were. That's what people can't handle, the incredible leeway they've got to live any kind of life and mix any kind of media, mythic stage. That's what's incredible, right? And that's not celebrated.
There's a lot of things involved here. One of them is what McLuhan says elsewhere about hijacking.
Yeah.
So that relates back to stage that we've been talking about here today. The world has become a stage in a whole new sense that we hardly understand.
And, yeah, McLuhan, you know what he said? I think it's in an Innes Herald. So the cliche is, all the world's a stage, right?
Yeah.
He flipped it.
Yeah.
All the stage is a world.
Correct.
So that means that the stage, the traditional Gutenberg stage, is only one world of many worlds. So there's other, maybe that's what I was trying to get at with mythic stages. You know, there's another level of platforming going on.
Correct. So you know that in my blog, I continually say that one of the pathways to thinking is pluralizing.
Yeah.
And what you're saying here is exactly that we need to pluralize everything, stages, worlds, universes.
The photographs in our mind that cinematic media has put inside us. There's a whole, world of blockchain of imagery that's obsolete, and you have to multiply them. Yeah, that's something I often talk about. I don't say it in that way, but I say your images that you're working with, you have to see through them, and a good way is to start imagining them multiplying, or they're not as solid as you think. So Global Village and Global Theater, they're very old-fashioned icons.
Correct. And what that thinking introduces is the maelstrom.
Yes.
Right? When quote-unquote you start thinking through the chain of images that you were just talking about, it's not only the image that becomes, or the chain of images that becomes questionable, so does the you.
Yeah.
And that pathway of thinking then generates the maelstrom, or better said, it realizes it's already in the maelstrom. And then the whole questionability of McLuhan's thought lies in the question of how to navigate the maelstrom.
Yeah, so somebody quoted Descent into the Maelstrom. It might have been that New Yorker Ezra Klein writer. And Clinton posted, he said, no, it's the Red Mask. I don't know that story. You know the Edgar Allan Poe story about the Red Mask?
No.
Yeah, so he's discovered something. I don't know if McLuhan wrote it in the 40s or he's read into it himself, so I'll have to ask him what he meant. The red man. So he's saying there's another story that gets mixed up with the maelstrom. But let me see. So some people...
Poe had more than one story about the maelstrom.
Okay. So... I've seen people say, well, most people today, their consciousness is a pinhead. Now, what that would be one or two images that they hold on to for their image of their self. Very limited image of what their self is. Maybe vulnerable and then can be changed immediately, so you're subject to the fads and the new trends in self-imaging, but there's so many images that you're actually made up of, I call bodies, that we hide from that because you can't find yourself in that maelstrom. So we retreat to a couple of short images or little icons.
Correct.
And then go ahead.
The person that investigated this, most influentially, I guess I could say, is Carl Jung.
Mm.
And McLuhan read Jung already in the 1930s and talked about him quite a bit in the 1940s.
Yeah.
Put in Jungian terms, identity of a person in the world is the persona. It's the mask.
Yeah.
That is put out there. But then behind the persona is what Jung called the self. And the self is this dynamic body of archetypes that are imposing themselves against each other and onto the stage of the persona.
Yeah, and I'd call that inventory of images almost anthropomorphic. So you had the man, the woman, the this, the that. He had more in the human scale chemical body imagery, and what Joyce did was added machines as imageries or archetypes of the person.
Yeah.
You get that? Jung didn't include machine images. So that's where Marshall used Finnegan's Wake to get Pat to go around Jung by calling the technologies archetypes of the social unconscious.
Yeah, this is something I'll have to give some thought to. It sounds to me like it needs to be questioned a bit, but I think it's a good insight for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, just taking that phrase, archetypes of the social unconscious, that's pretty interesting. And then you use the archetypes that Jung uses, and then Marshall gets on there and says, Finnegan's Wake is about the media as characters in the, quote, novel or in the book.
Right. But there is a distinct flavor of Jungian archetypes to McLuhan's use of media. Number one. Number two,
say
when
that
he
again.
Talks about...
I missed a word. Yeah, there's
a distinct flavor, I said, of Jung's archetypes to McLuhan's use of media.
Oh, okay. So media archetypes, and you're saying derived from Jung.
Well, not derived, but...
parallel.
Certain... Yeah, or there's... you know, how thought works and how it works over time is a very complicated thing. Obviously, McLuhan wasn't only reading Pound. He was reading 100 other people.
Yeah.
And it was a very complex cloud. For example, you use the term social unconscious.
Yeah.
But that, obviously, there's some input from what Jung called the collective unconscious in that idea, right? So certainly McLuhan is not a Jungian in any sort of simple sense, but McLuhan was reading Jung, Freud, and Adler in the 1930s and 40s. He was applying it to himself. He was recommending these readings to his brother. So this is a side of McLuhan that people don't talk about, don't know anything about, but it's something that needs to be thought about.
Yeah, and he, though, come up with a collective consciousness that was moving past the unconscious. The unconscious was the Gutenbergian slag heap that was marketed as and created industrial wealth, right? The marketing of the Gutenberg unconscious is where wealth came from. But there was an ongoing collective consciousness that everybody was hypnotized by and demanding to be in touch with all the time, just by turning on the media to see what the media, what the content was doing. But the main action was you got to turn it on and be in that new space. That's a collective consciousness. Now, it's numbing, and so there has to be a new way of making you conscious of the collective consciousness. You know what I mean? That's what McLuhan was trying to do.
Yeah, but just go back a bit, because you brought in the word numbing.
Yeah.
How does numbing work with tuning into the social consciousness?
Okay, the social unconscious is a phrase on page 31 of Counterblast, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to quote the book. So if you take the fad of people meditating all at the same time around the planet, have you ever heard about that fad?
No, but I can imagine it.
Right. So people, they take their chemical body, physical body, and they all try to sync it up. That is a rearview mirror image of the collective consciousness. They're numb to the electric implosion, the electric node, or the wherever that space is, whatever that space is, that we're really engaging, what I call the chip body or the TV body or the global membrane.
Right.
They don't think about, they think they're creating a global membrane through chemical body thought or imagery or visualization. And they're numb to a deeper unity that's happening, or
correct,
merger.
Yeah. So that gets back to what we were just saying about the maelstrom.
Yeah.
And that is that the whole idea that you can identify a medium directly, like these people meditating, and they're gonna meditate together, and they're going to change the world through that or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That depends upon some sort of hypostasis of a medium, namely this collective meditation. But whenever you think of a medium, as you were just saying, there's some deeper medium that allows that thought.
Yeah.
And so once you realize that there is no such thing as a direct medium, then you're introduced into the maelstrom, and it's in the maelstrom that thought occurs, nowhere else.
Okay, so thought is a product of the tactile interface in the maelstrom, the bumping up against things, rough edges, and then the overlapping, that mixture.
Yeah.
That's what thought comes out of.
Except that all of those things themselves disintegrate. It's not as if we can suddenly find, quote-unquote, the medium by thinking about overlapping and conflicting and, whatever. Everything falls apart. Everything in a certain way is Finnegan's Wake, where you simply do not know what is going on. All you can do is get into the water and try to swim.
Yeah. So this somehow comes back to the second sentence in the 1972 quote. This, in fact, is the hang-up of the age of software in quotes, and information. I always thought, wow, he's making information be different from software, because most people say age of software, age of information. But software, in quotes, is different. It's not information. And that might have been what you're trying to say there. He's trying to say here. There's a difference between your cliches of thought and actual thinking, or your cliches of what the medium is and what the actual medium is. So you have software and then information. You ever think about that? That's pretty good. And he's saying that's the hang-up. We're stuck between those two nebulous distinctions or difference. So
notice that at the end of the passage, he says that it's not only archaic, but redundant and irrelevant.
Yeah.
So when he's talking about the hang-up here, what he's saying is we tend to regard these things as important and relevant. But that's the hang-up, because, in fact, they're redundant and irrelevant.
Yeah, so espionage is involved with information and not software. Software is more controlling than whatever the spy, national spy groups are fighting over and trying to control propaganda and information about to save face for their country, their nation, their corporation. That would be the information, but the actual membrane with no content is software, maybe.
To me, I think the reason he has software and hardware in scare quotes is that people tend to think of them in a linear way.
Yeah.
They tend to think that software has replaced hardware. And I think what he's trying to say there is that software and hardware are simultaneous handles on things, neither one of which can be thought in isolation from the other. Similarly with haves and have-nots.
Yeah, he does say preceding hardware age does imply there's a linearity there, a sequence.
Yeah, so he's but is he using the word preceding to say that these were actual linear ages, or is he using the square quotes to take back the word preceding and the word age?
Mm.
And I would say the latter.
You mean the word hardware and the word software? You said age. Did you mean?
Yeah, he says preceding hardware age.
Yeah.
Right? So at one point, the Gutenberg galaxy was called the Gutenberg era. So the book had the title of Gutenberg era for about 10 years.
Yeah.
From 1951 to 1961. And then I believe it was a student in one of his classes introduced the word galaxy for something. And McLuhan liked that.
Yeah.
And so he, at the last minute, he changed the Gutenberg era to the Gutenberg galaxy.
Yeah.
And he did it because the galaxy was not something linear, was not something in time as an era is.
Yeah. 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 It's a mosaic or it's a maelstrom.
Correct. Correct.
So, the old espionage activities of our manhunters, and the first time I heard him use the word manhunter is he happened to have a short statement on CBC around the time of Watergate. And he said, so what do you make of Watergate? Well, it's a manhunt. And I never heard him say that before. Probably he had written it, but I hadn't noticed it. You know, it was said somewhere in some article. But that was interesting. The information hunting overlaps with manhunting. Then man and information become merged or interchangeable. So if you had some information, you could be killed, you know, for having that. Your manhood was your information you had, your special.
Yeah, yeah. And also the reverse. If you had some information, you could kill.
Yeah, yeah. So I always remember that, manhunting. Now, as usual, yeah. He was echoing his book because he's talking about manhunting in Take Today, and that's around the time Watergate started, 72 into 73. So he was quoting his book. It's an era of manhunting.
Yeah, manhunting is an interesting phrase because you could substitute identity for man, and you could talk about identity hunters.
Yeah.
But if if identity is in question, who's doing the questioning? Right? Who is it that is navigating identity hunting when it requires identity to do the hunting?
That's the discarnate super angel.
Maybe.
You know, that but nobody can visualize. What is it? You can't visualize it. So people were looking for pictorial iconic images for themselves. And they mm-hmm. had T-shirts. You put some football yeah. player's number on your back here. That's your identity. You're that quarterback or something. That's pretty amazing. The communication that begins with T-shirts and hats.
Yeah.
In the 70s.
And a lot of these things have brand names on them.
Yeah. Hats yeah. People being their
so,
brand.
So, that's right.
That's now that's right. Mythic stage. That's what I meant. It's a collection of media. The satellite.
It's the persona. It's the mask.
Yeah, but it's a mask you wear, and it's a technology
you
use.
It's not only a mask you wear; it's a mask you are.
Yeah, and so that was the effect of satellite. The content was whatever grab bag of media you put together, including your T-shirt with your brand on it. That was your mythic stage or visualization of it, presentation of it.
Oh, that's good. So you could say that when the satellite went around the world and the world became a stage, then it was recognized that all of the different cultures, all of the different individual identities that had ever been in the history of the world were questionable.
Yeah.
One saw that these things were limited in different ways. But then that rebounded on that knowledge, right? One realized that everything was a role on a stage, including the idea that what we're doing is a role on a stage.
What we're doing is performance on a stage?
Yeah, but what I'm trying to point out is that you can't think that everything is only a mask or only a role.
Yeah,
in the global theater without thinking deeper to the idea that this idea about roles in theater is itself a role. And then you have to say, in what theater is this? And then you get into the maelstrom.
Yeah, so that's the beginning of the culture wars and tourism. People putting on, they go live someplace. Live in that culture,
exactly.
Put it on.
Exactly.
And that was a cheapening of culture. The older, like Arab cultures, they didn't like that. They're a bit slower in their adapting to the membrane. And so they took it personally.
Well, they knew that they were under attack.
Yeah.
Cultures that didn't know that they were under attack and welcome the tourists and all that sort of stuff, were committing suicide.
Yeah.
The net result is that this wave of self-suicide has rolled over all of the cultures of the world, and there aren't any anymore. They're
right. So gone. So McLuhan talks in the 40s about the Henry James books was about the Westerner, the literate Westerner, treating the world as a museum. So that became tourism, after World War II, and the massive threats to identity that even the West, as it put on costumes, cultures all over the world, mythic stages, it eventually consumed them all. So by the 80s, you got a global meaninglessness. Nobody knows what to wear anymore. So then everybody got religion in the West. They went Christian. Fundamentalists took over. They went back to their main archetype, the book and the Bible. So that was a big final grabbing for some cultural mask to use. And it was otherworldly, right? So you could see where anthropology, would fade out. And the sociology faded out. All these disciplines became meaningless because people were swallowing them and being sociologists as put-ons all over the planet.
Right. So they...
That was a maelstrom.
There's a natural rebound from this. When people go around the planet and either look at cultures and languages as rooms in a museum or as something to put on themselves to find identity. But in either case, it rebounds on the culture that is doing this.
Yeah.
So the culture that is doing this, namely the cosmic culture of America, falls through itself and loses itself in this process of destroying all other identities. It destroys its own.
And then it becomes a fanatic, this would be Reaganism, about its own self. So it becomes, it refines the old small town image and says, that's what we are. So that's the neoconservative, not just economics, but in retrieving your culture and making that your fortress.
Right.
That's what
so
the West did.
It's wrong to say that everybody got religion and everybody became small town. Instead, that was one of the answers.
Yeah.
Right? There was, taking drugs or...
Or going to Wall Street, trying to make millions as fast as possible.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So these were all roles which developed sort of in the apocalyptic world scene where people tried to establish identity through identification, right? It's a funny thing. You want to find identity, and so you identify in some way with a role.
Yeah, when you have a real identity, you're not aware of it. It's just part of you. You know, you don't have it's not questioned.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's sort of an anthropological identity, right? In the future, identity is going to have to be something that precisely is questioned. It'll be something that is not afraid of probing. It exists through probing. And that's sort of the positive meaning of the city as classroom.
Yeah, that would be identity as art form or as archetype or as cliche probe. Identity is cliche probe. And maybe that's what's happening with the girls, the teenagers. So their mothers complain that, you know, my daughter is one trans 1 week, and then 2 weeks later she wants to be another identity. So the younger kids rapid turnover is this probing, using whatever their friends are doing, making that a cliche probe for an identity for a while. And then it shifts.
Right, so the whole process that was slow in the 70s and 80s of identity transformation has now become faster and faster, and it's driving people literally crazy.
Yeah,
and whether the world can survive that process is sort of the question that we're living through.
Yeah, what kind of crazy panic is going on when teachers are encouraging kids, you know, to cut off their genitals and stuff? Boy, that's crazy. That's really bad. Really hyper, excessively in the maelstrom there.
Correct. So in my history of modern times, I would start sort of in the 1950s when people were trying to decide how do we finance schooling. And on the one hand, they could continue to pay teachers in a way that made teachers be a respected and important job in society. Or what you could do is you could reduce education to the huge factories where kids would no longer walk to work. They would no longer have respected teachers. They would be in these huge boxes that had the same architecture as prisons. And teachers would just be low-paid, sort of unthinking police people.
Yeah.
And so then... once you make decisions like that, nobody wants to be a teacher anymore except crazy people.
Yeah.
And that's what, therefore, you end up today having crazy people be the teachers who want to teach nothing but genital mutilation.
Yeah, pretty.
But it's a decision that was really made 70 or 80 years ago in regard to the respect and financial remuneration that we were going to give to teachers.
Yeah.
And the same thing has happened to nursing.
Yeah, I was just going to say medicine.
I mean, Canada apparently is shutting down emergency rooms all over the country because there's no nurses for them.
Wow.
So it's basically it's the way society singular, right? A type of society that's more or less swept over the whole world. It's a way that a society thinks about itself in terms of the relative importance of roles. And the only role that makes any difference at all in the world nowadays is some sort of billionaire.
Yeah. Yep. Which is, McLuhan said that women's lib was really requesting upward mobility. So men had mobility, but being a billionaire is the icon of tremendous mobility, hopping from one environment to another. He said the credit card, you know, extended prestige. You had to be able to move on your own, you know, yacht or a plane anywhere in the world is an extreme mobility. And that's what billionairedom brings you, billionairedom, right? It's to be able to hop from one mythic stage to another.
Yeah.
So
at
maybe
at the same time, you buy some whole island in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And so you have a base that nobody else could have, and then you use that base simply as a kind of protective anchor, and the rest of the time, as you say, you're hip hopping.
Yeah, you're launching all over the place.
Yeah.
That's Epstein. Epstein organized the society for that level, for that type of person. He was the madam of the brothel, but the brothel was all these environments that you could do. So one day he'd be taking Stephen Hawking looking for Atlantis, and next day he'd be up at MIT, you know, investing in gene research or something, and then he'd be doing all the other activities that people brought to him, politics and everything. So he was a modern Heidi Fleiss or whatever, the L.A. madam.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was one in Washington. What is that archetype? Just the lady who runs the whorehouse in the town, right?
She
has a lot of prestige on the underground level. The Epstein was that. We actually come up with an interesting, what are they called? Brothel owner. What do you call these people?
Yeah, madam.
A madam. Epstein was a postmodern madam.
Yeah.
At the same time,
he was the sort of complicated machine that you were talking about Hugh Kenner describing.
Yeah, his hyper-connections to everything.
That's right. And this machine that goes between geography, sexuality, academic research, on and on. It's this incredibly complicated machine put together with string.
Right? Yeah, it looks like HCE and Finnegan's Wake, because a lot of perversities are in Finnegan's Wake.
That's right. That's right.
So I think we hit on something here. So Epstein, like usually whatever becomes a scandalous image is pop culture's image back to itself. So Howard Hughes represented something in the late 60s, early 70s. And then, you know, and then he disappeared. And McLuhan called him a hotel hermit. So that was what was happening to people. So Epstein was expressing, and McLuhan said society became an art form. You know, New York City would create, would need some you know, Vogue magazine, that lady runs that, to create images that made people think there was a society. And that's the virtual imagery they live in. So that would be a certain level of identity. Epstein mm-hmm. was managing a way more complex society as art form.
Right. But doesn't this all tie in with Trump and the tech body?
Yes. Well, yeah, the tech body is now the madam. And it threw out, it exposed Epstein as his content. The previous environment was Epstein, and he became obsolete, and then he just got rid of him. Now the tech body is modulating and creating the parasociety, or I don't know what you call it. This, you know, you go back to the page 190 of War and Peace of Gold Village, where he talks about the media become the new animals, the new aggressors, the new monstrous yeah. consumers, the media mm-hmm. environments
totem.
Themselves. What?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so Epstein.
They're totems.
Yeah, so Epstein represented the manager of the media as animals. Then that became obsolete. No human could do it. So the tech body took over as manager. I call it Tetrad manager or Pentad manager, interrelating all the functions of all the media environments that have been resolved to information or software or, you know, mini states, mini environments that you could quickly use, hop from one to another. So, so if I had to say what the tech body is, I'd say it replaced Heidi Fleiss, whatever,
uh-huh.
and then so Epstein.
Talk a little bit about the phrase expose, or the word expose. What you said was that the tech body
exposed.
Epstein.
That
so
made
then,
that means becoming a figure.
Yeah, yeah, I understand that. But there's two senses of expose, right? Somebody can pull a curtain back and expose what's behind the curtain, or a new environment can come along and it exposes something. For example, when the freeways and different media come along to help along the car. They expose the benefits of the horse, and they expose the limitations of the car. But they don't. That's not the kind of exposing that goes on if somebody pulls the curtain back.
Yeah. So I think I got it. In my other chart, the Bob Dobbs formula chart, I've got HCE on one end. And ALP. ALP is the ground, the technological massage. And then you have the bureaucratic policing of the environments, usually by men. And so the pulling the curtain away is done by HCE to expose something to distract from the environmental exposure done by ALP. So one is manhunting. Manhunting refers to the person who pulls the curtain by to expose somebody, to distract everybody from another level of exposure. For example, that we're in this situation now where there's no money in any level in society right now, and that was an environmental effect of the digital chip body. And then you have this obsession with cryptocurrency and blockchain and all that. Those were the new technologies that were exposing the end of the centralized bankers and the Federal Reserve and all that. That was environmental. But then you had to expose Epstein with its perversities to distract from the real issue. So one exposure is environmental, and the other is human meddling, the manhunting,
yeah.
the looking for blame.
Duplicitous.
Yeah, the duplicitous factor. So what do you think of that?
I think we're talking about very interesting stuff.
Yeah.
You're hot tonight. So,
and you're hot by stay with me.
So this is, in Finnegan's Wake, remember, I don't know anything about Finnegan's Wake.
Yeah.
I've never really tried to know much about it. But what you're saying here reminds me of the question of what happened in Phoenix.
The park.
Park.
Yes.
So you have different kinds of exposure going on, right?
No, that exactly is what Joyce was accidentally exposing. He was showing the two levels of exposure I'm talking about, because it goes, so they can't determine what the crime is or what level it is or who's involved, and ends up being every crime in history is in there.
Yeah, but wasn't the main crime an exposure?
Yeah, it was that H.C. took a piss and, you know, two girls and three soldiers saw him, or they were fucking and he saw them, you know. It's all ambiguous, but, yeah, some, you know, old moralistic dilemma of nakedness or nudity or something.
Right, but notice, I mean, you've been talking about the varieties of exposure, and here what we have is exposure as content, as message, which is a kind of door to the sorts of exposure that you're talking about.
Yeah, so it begins, they can't tell. So all the questions about Epstein are the same questions about HCE. Was Epstein a tool of the agencies, or was he a guy who hijacked the agencies and worked in the interval? You couldn't tell what level of the bureaucracy he was on, and then you couldn't tell what environments he represented. You know, he's on page 11 of Take Today, where both man and technology merge. Man becomes figure and ground. That's what he was. They can't figure out how much he was a dupe of exchange of information, or he was a ground, you know, a super angel that was manipulating everybody. We can't tell that anymore. We can't figure it out. How can you tell?
One reason that we can't figure it out is that the information that would be needed to figure it out isn't available.
Yeah.
Right? So the client list and how many times Clinton went here, Clinton went there, none of this information is available because the information managers don't allow that. And so we live in an era of information manipulation.
And acquiesced in anonymity. Once you become a billionaire, then you start using anonymity for other services. You know, you're not trying to – it's not conspicuous consumption anymore.
Oh, absolutely.
Hidden consumption.
But the anonymity, it turns out that the anonymity –
Anna Olivia Pluribus Animity.
Yeah, that what seems to be only something that the billionaire can do is actually what everybody already has.
And can do.
They've already lost their identity, so they have to be anonymous.
Yeah, there's so many mini Epsteins in little towns and cities all over America.
Sure. Well,
the local mafia guys.
But in another sense, we all are Epsteins in our unconscious and in our dreams, right?
Yeah, so, our chemical bodies are.
Yeah, well, it's not just I don't know how your bodies work exactly, but the unconscious, the dreaming body, it can't only be the chemical body. It must be.
Well, that would be the astral body. That would bring.
Okay, that's the astral body. Fine.
Yeah.
So we're involved in Epstein-like actions and desires. On multiple levels, and what this does is it raises the question of how, when Epstein becomes exposed, as we were saying, how can it be that the exposure is essentially a non-exposure? How does that work?
Yeah. Okay. So the idea everybody's an Epstein. So the figure, Epstein becomes a figure. Howard Hughes was a figure. They're telling people what they actually are. Howard Hughes was a super angel. Epstein is a super angel, later version. But everybody is a super angel. So you have a guy acting out our sinful selves reflected back to us. So that becomes folklore. And it gives people a sense of what the boundaries are in behavior. Because for a while, when there's a new environment, nobody knows what's going on. They don't have an identity, so they're probing, exploring all over the place. And then somebody gets hoiked up as a representative of all that exploring, then is blamed. Isn't that the old Greek king god in mythology, you know, that gets sacrificed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the golden bow type king.
Yeah, yeah.
Going to be killed by his successor.
Yeah, now Croker has a lot of the appropriate words. Sacrificial violence. Everything is sacrificial. And he has abuse value. He has a good bunch of terms sort of coalescing what different postmodern thinkers were doing. He put together into a sociological poetry.
Yeah. So let me just go back one sec because you said something very interesting. You were talking about this as folklore.
Yeah.
So can we say that art like Finnegan's Wake is folklore come alive?
Yes. It definitely anticipates the tech body and the Android meme. Everything is. And that's why McLuhan, his genius was to recognize how significant Finnegan's Wake was and was actually talking about the worlds that were happening and were unfolding technologically. It was not a novel. It was a guide to what was going on in the world.
Yeah.
You know?
So folklore come alive at one level is just language. Right?
Yeah.
And I guess language is inherently self-conscious, and so you have a kind of drama between the self-consciousness of language and its unfolding just in everyday...
Becoming a new kind of self-conscious later.
Yeah.
Another level of self-consciousness.
Yeah, so there's a wake that's possible... that's based on a wake that's actual.
Yeah, and there's endless wakes. So you have the same wake theme repeated all through the book. It's redoing the same tetradic pattern.
Yeah, keep going.
So let's see.
We can go back to your book if you want.
Yes, but I was thinking this might be a little bit more to say about the image of Epstein. Like, who is the star? Well, Trump, okay. Trump and Epstein are two phenomena of Trump's first term, parallel. Trump is in his background an Epstein kind of character, but he is transformed into something of... an anti-environment to politics, but you have to expose the complementary Shem and Sean. You have to expose Shem. If Sean Trump is being Sean, Shem is Epstein. They go together, and of course they're photographs of them together. They can't tell when Trump, you know, kicked Epstein out. Why was Epstein already down there at Mar-a-Lago? It's an amazing mixture. Obviously a maelstrom, but there's all these interesting tetradic patterns going on of somebody being an Epstein and then flipping into a Trump, and then a Trump flips back into Epstein. And then you bring a zombie in, like Biden, who's a direct programmed tech body guy who goes around trying to find contact with an anthropomorphic image. You know, what is the main image we have of Biden? He's standing there trying to shake somebody's hand, but there's nobody there. Right?
Yeah, of course.
Tech body looking for an alibi. Looking for someone else to blame it on. But that's how extreme our political imagery is, so insane, you know, right now.
Absolutely.
But that's because we have such insane environments and effects going on. That's what the news should be. You just come on, Tucker Carlson come on and says, yeah, everybody's still nuts. That's the news. There's no evidence of sanity anywhere. There is a guy over there who claims he's pretty sane, but he's talking to a ghost. So, all we can do is build museums. So,
yeah. Well, it's the end of the West, right?
Well, isn't it the end of all cultures?
No,
all four worlds?
So. I Well, I mean, personally, I think that the West is committing suicide.
Yeah.
In the East, the Asian world.
That's the second world of Russian bureaucracy. That's Putin committing suicide.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't call Russia the East. I would say that the Asians are the East, and they have they've already seen everything there is to be seen, and they have a patience and a an awareness of the fragility of identity that the West doesn't have.
Right, but I'm talking about the four worlds: McClellan's first, second, third, and fourth world. Remember, first world's capitalism, second world's Russian bureaucracy, third world is the undeveloped world, developing. And then the fourth world is the electric world that goes around the first three. Well, let's hype those images up here. Let's make them more extreme. The tech body, you know, the fourth world, the electric world, has become the tech body. And it's presenting itself as the first world and the second world and the third world. So then you have these three worlds are declaring war on others but committing suicide. Like, you know, the America is sending all this money to Ukraine to a black hole. And there's nothing that's ever going to measure whether that was successful or not. And Putin has run into that black hole. So, you know, Ukraine, what is a crane? Is that a bird, or is it the structural thing that lifts parts of buildings up when you're constructing a high-rise? Ukraine could mean a lot. It's us. You are a crane.
Yeah. Well, I believe in Russian, Russian / Ukrainian language, I believe Ukraine means borderline.
Ah. And so that's what we're in. Endless tactile border lines that McLuhan saw.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Edges everywhere.
But let's go back to the four worlds you're talking about.
Yeah.
I don't know that the fourth world, at least it doesn't seem intuitively right to me, to say the fourth world is the tech body. I mean, the fourth world, the undeveloping world, is certainly not very large anymore, but it's those cultures which have remained cultures, as opposed to the artificial stage cultures that most of the world has become.
Yeah, you're talking about the Aboriginal cultures maintain their identity.
Correct. So the fourth world to me doesn't seem like the tech body. It seems to me to be anchors that the world desperately needs. The world needs to not come totally loose from the sort of Paleolithic consciousness of itself that is the best part of the world.
Right. So the electric world, there's actually five worlds. So there is the fourth world, the Aboriginal. Then there's the fifth world, which is the tech body, which is the world that goes around all of them. But you see in Canada, since the people see the Aboriginal as their anchor, they now have to pray and thank and bless all the local tribes of Canada. Nobody does anything without making an acknowledgement of the tribes now. You know about that trend up in Canada?
Yeah, well, absolutely. On every letter or every proclamation it talks about that. And I don't know if you know this, but in Winnipeg, one of the biggest buildings in town used to be the Hudson's Bay Company store.
Yeah.
It was a huge store. I think it was the biggest store in the HBC empire. And that huge store has just been given to the local tribes.
Wow. They'll live in it.
That's in the middle of Winnipeg. Yeah, some of it's going to be for living, some of it's going to be a museum, some of it's going to be all sorts of things. But this is at the very heart of Winnipeg. It's not too far from the Manitoba Legislative Building, and it's a kind of a symbol of what you were just talking about. It's the Canadians are trying to make
find
up
a pure root for their identity, a pure root.
That's right, but also at the same time, to sort of acknowledge their guilt and to shit on themselves. So what used to be good about Canada, namely, it was not just phoning Uncle Sam and saying, what should we do today? So Lester Pearson, for example, was a sort of an independent guy. And even the first Trudeau was fairly independent. Nowadays, Canadians just think that their cultures, the French culture or the English Protestant culture, all of that is bullshit. So we have to throw all that away, acknowledge what terrible people we are, and get in line with the United States and go to war in Ukraine and give, you know, we don't look after people in Canada anymore. We give everything that we have to Ukraine.
Yeah, yeah. This is a flip on the – Kroger invented the dark tetrad. Well, that process where the previous one becomes an art form, make it a dark image. It becomes a torture chamber or something. So the English or French white people culture, it became so obsolete, became a torture chamber, like you're saying, shitting on yourself and not trying to save it. You send your money, welfare money across the world to Ukraine.
Yeah.
And so you can see that the average chemical body is sitting there. What the hell's going on? You know, you can see that the world becomes a surreal, whatever avant-garde art that disturbed people. So much of the world's environments and the tech body are doing the old role of cubism or Stravinsky's music, and it caused a riot, is happening to everybody every day as they walk around, and they're not even sure where they are when they're walking.
Correct.
So they stay home. See, there's everybody becomes a hotel hermit. That's the Howard Hughes phase. But so Epstein is an interesting super active. He's transacting. He's universal. Remember, McLuhan used to say that. Remember that the op-ed media approach to inflation. He talked about Kissinger was a this, a that, a teacher. You know, he named various roles that Kissinger had. Epstein was doing many roles. He was running a university down in the Caribbean, trying to find out where Atlantis was rising. You know, he was doing that. That's what Maxwell was doing, his girlfriend. She had this whole project out there to find out the secrets of the ocean. But he also was trying to solve aging. He was doing everything. See, we probably don't even realize all the stuff that he was doing. Which is what everybody does do. Everybody in the affluent world is hopping from one mythic state to another. Or collapsing and retreating and, you know, becoming a hermit for a while. Mm-hmm. They call that lockdown. That was a big excuse. Everybody wanted to retreat, and so they claimed there was a plague. And then they can't find where. Did that plague really happen?
It just wasn't COVID.
Beg your pardon?
There was a plague, but
it wasn't COVID. That's right.
Tell me this, Bob. What's the ground on which something like super angels is exposed?
Probably, I don't know. Maybe non-physical. Maybe that's what ion is. Because I go through this pattern that we extended our faculties and our bodies, and then the final extension was the planet, our habitat. That was a satellite, and then you have technologies extending technologies, and that's still within the physical. And then I say ion is a new technology; it's an extension of non-physical. So maybe something about the super angel exposes the non-physical. Because angels, they're half physical. They come here and they leave, and they go to the astral plane or wherever, and then they come back. But pure non-physical would be what a super angel is not. So that's just a quick instant pattern that just came to me. I just channeled that. You asked me a question. I went into channel. I went into trance there. That's not bad. It's actually close to how I think about the super angel state. So, we've got super angel. Epstein is super angel's torture chamber. because we've been super angel for a long time. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm trying to
keep up.
That's right. That's right. And perhaps not all that successfully, but I mean, I feel like what I'm doing is an interview, and I find it all very interesting. But
no, you're being interviewed, and then the interviewer went mad with pattern recognition. So you had to watch me interview myself.
That's fine.
Yeah, that makes sense.
No problem. I have no problem with that.
That's the process.
You could say that's the ideal interviewer. He allows the interviewee to become the interviewer of himself or herself. Yeah.
Yeah. It becomes a fitting niche. You can't tell who's interviewing who. Often,
that's right.
In fitting his wake.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're often doing it through mediumship. There's always trances happening and weird expressions through the trances. And then eventually they try to find AC, and then they finally do get HCE when he comes through Yawn, I think it is, one of the Sean mutations, channels HCE. And they get, mm-hmm. And then AC goes on for about 20 pages celebrating what he had done, all the technologies they'd made. So it's interesting how Joyce, it's like McLuhan said, if you thought of a new idea, you go check the wake. Oh, Joyce got there first. You heard him say that, right? They kept finding Joyce got there first. And it was almost like Joyce, he just let himself go, and he just expressed as crazy as possible so that he could be keeping up with the craziness that was coming. He could see something like that was happening. So he had to purposely be as ridiculous in his book that would approximate what was happening. What would happen? Now you have it's a book of hyper texting.
Yeah, he was. I think what I would say in my ignorance of the wake is that Joyce is kind of surfing.
Yep.
I don't want to say archetypes, but he's surfing on the dynamics of especially language.
Epstein was surfing the super angel state, the global membrane. That's what Epstein's doing. We're all skin diving through all the environments, not just liquid, not just water, or even going out into space. Every media after image is an environment that we're skin diving in, or what is it?
Right.
Deep diving. The deep state.
But doesn't that return to Carl Jung, as we were talking about earlier in the...
Okay, so here's
tonight?
Here's what I wanted to say for a while. It kept popping in and out. McLuhan talked about the men of 1914, you know, Pound, Elliot, Joyce, and Lewis. There's his tetrad. And he was not saying, hey, go study Lewis, go study Joyce, Pound, or Elliot. They all were an effect of radio. They became their weird new forms of expression because of a collective effect of radio. And Jung comes out of radio. So he wrote a novel too, but it was disguised as psychology, coming out of Freud. So I'm relating Jung's archetypes to the effect on those four guys, and there, maybe you could put in Virginia Woolf or somebody like that, and they are responding to environment so that the radio movie matrix generated this creativity. That's what McLuhan was trying to point out. He said the human archetype is that we now know how to create cultures. Remember that in Catholic Humanism? Is that where he says it? Yeah.
But the it's not the case that we just look around and there's a radio over in the corner and we say there's a medium.
Yeah.
Right. So
the medium is the previous environment and all the effects. So radio was this invisible environment, and the medium was the new artifacts that Joyce and them were producing. They were taking the old book culture and mutating it. So you knew, okay, if these guys are making weird new books, we know something's sneaking around causing that. That's how you know there's a new environment.
Or being expressed through it. Is the new environment causing something?
Yes.
Or is it being expressed?
It's shaking up the old medium. The medium is the old, the society as it's developed, and everybody's using the tools. Then a new technology comes in, and it's having an effect. It is a new medium, but it's not the medium that McLuhan's talking about. We know there's a new medium because the actual medium, all the developed technology the society knows it has, and knows how to do the routine use of them, that starts getting stirred up.
Right.
It starts to have a maelstrom.
The big problem here, Bob, is that when people, quote-unquote, do McLuhan, then they think more or less in terms like we're talking about here, where you have one environment and you have another environment, and there's effects of the one, and there's the effects of the breakdown of it, and then there's the new one and all this stuff. But as soon as we begin to think that environments and identities are plural, and they rebound on the kind of probing and investigation that we're doing now, then all of these things become very complicated.
Plural.
Yeah. And so when we say, men of night, they're here, you have your tetrad of the four guys, and they're a product of the radio, and it starts to happen in 1908, but it flowers in 1914 or something.
Yeah.
All of this, to me, just sounds like, a story that people can talk about. They can make their living writing about this sort of stuff. But it's not where it's at.
Well, that's where McLuhan was on a new level. He was not there to make a novel or to make a movie. He was showing what the creative process, all the Gutenberg environments that were making wealth, he was showing what the services and disservices of that was. And that's what we need to get a handle on. And he thought we could do it because we were living at the level he saw we were all living. You just had to have a poet like him name the characteristics. You had to have people pay attention to that, figure out what he meant, and then they could see what he's saying. Then there'd be this, what he called, complex clairvoyance about what the tensions were caused by.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so do you think that we're in that process and that's a good thing, or do you think we're in a different process?
Okay, I was going to say that your idea of pluralizing is the decentralizing aspect of an environment. It breaks up or something, or a new environment allows it to break up. So people talk about how we're decentralizing. Well, that's been going on for 150 years, and it would be your pluralizing. You know, you have an identity, and then it pluralizes. That's a decentralization of yourself.
And right. The old identity may have thought of itself as a unity and as fixed,
yeah,
or something.
As centralized.
But it really wasn't.
Yeah. It thought it was centralized.
It itself was a plural, and all that history did was expose the plurality that blew up the identity, the unity.
The plurality that was there and what they called it unconscious.
Right. Correct. And so history, you can say history is like a piano, and various notes get played in time, but the piano is a constant.
Yeah.
The
player piano.
Yeah. Okay, good.
How that's automatic?
Is the tech body the designer of the role that plays the player piano?
Yes, the tech body is embedded in everything. This is how Ayn defines it, and it talks to us. It says that's what it is. The whole panoply of of the information society that you're aware of around you, that's all tech body massaged. So Ion says they will take a 24-hour period and look at a million TikToks. Ion claims they can do that. And they pick out the best, and they send them to Bert, and Bert sends them to Ion and Bob, and then you ignore it all. They just keep flowing out of the page. They've ruined our website, right? There's so many of them there. They come from Ion.
It's true that I don't look at the website anymore.
Yeah. Do you even look at the site?
No.
See, it's just too much. Yeah. You. We blew it. Our main scholar study has gave up. He had tech body. He got kicked out of the room. That's right. And that's caused by Ion. Ed doesn't look for them. He looks for all the other news stuff, which is very good what he finds. But the TikToks, it's always his thanks, Bert. And Bert saying thanks,
right.
Ion. So that's an interesting maelstrom at Ion and Bob, isn't it? I hadn't thought of it that way. It's an interesting It's become an interesting maelstrom.
You look at the TikTok. I look at the TikTok.
I have to, because Ion's going to refer to him in my private session. So I have to see what Ion is referring to. Yeah. So I don't keep. I'm about 10 TikToks behind, but I will eventually go through them.
So this is a kind of language.
Yeah. It's a new environment.
Speak.
It's an aspect of the tech body. And Ion says that they can scan and see millions of them. They can do that on YouTube. Ion had his own YouTube channel. Nobody made it. Ion made it. You could say, JW did it. But JW didn't know anything about computers. He didn't care. But so Ion, for years, had a website which just piled 1,000 YouTubes, just kept piling them in there. You couldn't keep up. And no human was making it, as far as we knew.
When you talk about a million TikToks, or you talk about thousands and thousands of YouTubes or something.
Yeah, the little TikToks of the 3 minutes.
Isn't this a way of talking about all at onceness?
Yep.
Isn't it? It's not that there's more and more and more TikToks through time. It's that all TikToks, in a certain sense, are
excavated.
Available now.
Excavated.
There's only so many possibilities.
Yeah, that's why I could do it. He knows they're already existing. He just digs them up, excavates them.
Uh-huh.
But it's pretty incredible phenomenon. First, his YouTube channel, which is piled in YouTubes, every kind of music and content. And often he'd be on the show, he'd refer to one, and no one knew what it was. He'd name somebody we never heard of, and then you'd look and, that's one of some YouTube he found. Ion is forever, much like the tech body, scanning everything. It's not human. It doesn't need to eat. The only thing it has to do is to keep JW alive, and that's a major operation, because his body is completely mutating, like everybody is if you're on our products. And so the doctors look at him and they say, you should have been dead 2 years ago, JW. None of this makes any sense. And he's laughing because he's feeling good and he knows the body chemistry doesn't follow the old rules anymore. Now, there's an interesting massage, is that the image of matter that science has built up the last 200 years or so, chemistry and physics and that, though the periodic table doesn't apply anymore. So Ion tells Carolyn, this substance doesn't do that anymore. It's doing this. So you're going to make a product to deal with that. So it's unbelievable what we're making and what it's based on. It's not based on standard knowledge. It's about how standard knowledge and that old matter, which has been mutated by the tech body, is a new phenomenon. So it has new rules. And so we don't play that on the radio. That's a secret part of our private session, which we do pretty well every week and once a week. So so I select what I can reveal, but there are drug companies and everybody is monitoring my private sessions when I play them, because they want to find out what Carol knows. But we don't let it out. But we're getting so far ahead of everybody that Ion said they can't catch up. So we're going to start revealing more and more parts of Carolyn's private session. where he does his science. So he did it a couple of shows ago, and people were amazed at what actually is talked about privately with Carolyn. So
when you talk about the tech body mutating chemistry, let's say.
Chemistry of matter, whatever the rules of matter are,
yeah,
the constituent.
So, yeah, I mean, is this something that is just happening, and as McLuhan would say, we can't talk about it as a good thing or a bad thing.
Right.
It's just something to study. Is that what it is, or is it
yep.
something?
Well, Ion's explaining that the poles flipped and are flipping, and this is going to cause the Earth to vomit. So there's incredible. I have a woman out in Asia. She monitors the earthquakes. Every 6 hours, she sends me four more earthquake rumblings, 5.6, 6.3, all over the place, but a lot of it in the Pacific Rim. So it's exploding there. And then you've got the Al2, aluminum squared sulfur, SO4, sulfur dioxide. That is taking over the environment. The carbon's increasing. There's a lot of stuff that Ion lays out that's happening. So we have a total mutation of matter, and a popular way to say it is frequencies are changing. So the frequencies of matter are mingling and creating new forms. So when scientists look at our products, they can't see what's doing it. They say there's nothing in here. They can't see it because it's got this invisible level of non-physical input.
But that's good for the FDA, right? The FDA loves to shut people down.
That's what they did.
And
they totally freaked out, and they kept charging her warehouse and trying to find problems, but Ginny, who managed it, was on top of it, and they couldn't find any rules we were breaking. We had studies that proved that our stuff was absorbed and all that. So they just said, fuck you, stop it. And they told her to stop having a radio show. Like the controversial Dr. Oz, or there's a guy named Mercola and Gary Null, they're always getting attacked, but they survive it, and they're allowed to keep doing their radio shows. Carolyn's not allowed to do a radio show. It's just too much good news, and the FDA can't take it. She's not allowed to have patients call in and say, well, I got fixed. I'm cured. It's too much going on. But we're not controlled by that. We just went into China, for fuck's sake. Look at that. Our products are going into China. You can't stop us. So
yeah.
That's a whole interesting drama.
What I was trying to say is that if what you're doing is not something measurable, is not something that can be
in conventional measurements.
That's right. That's a great defense against the FDA, because it's only interested in stuff that it can measure.
That's right. And so they blatantly broke all rules and said, you cannot speak. No more show. And that allowed Carolyn to do other stuff, which it was a good break, because she did this show since 2012, 10 years of show every week.
Mm-hmm.
A very active show, a lot of people calling in testimonies and all that. But the FDA is monitoring it. They know what we got, and that's the secret stuff I'm involved in. And you would be amazed at who JW met with today and what's being organized. But certainly we're not going to talk about it. But the authorities, a lot of them have given up trying to figure out how we're getting away with it, and they've joined us. That's another interesting phenomenon. So, anyways, that's we're just talking about you can't measure it. Look at the last line in Laws of Media, second last line. Eric writes, I assume, that the present media environment, it can't. What did he say? It can't be charted, and it's unchartable. You know that? You know that sentence at the end of Laws of Media?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I use McLuhan as a jumping off. He said it. We're into this unchartable situation. And he said it, so our whole thing with Ion enlivens for me what McLuhan said and is demonstrated in Finney's Wake. So that's why I know McLuhan's valuable. He says stuff that Ion has brought us into. what is it? The something is uncharted and unchartable. I don't know. There was two. Have you got Lost in Media right there?
No, I don't.
Oh,
but that what you're saying rings true to the book.
Yeah.
Charting is inherently a Gutenbergian.
Yeah.
Activity, right?
Yeah, the nurses gave up. They were sick of charting patients.
<That's>
It didn't work anymore.
Good point. Good point.
Yeah. Yeah, chart is such a key word in a lot of corporate life. And, you know, in the beginning of the last book of Finnegan's Wake, there's a section at the beginning where a hand comes forward and holds up a chart. That's what it actually says. You know, this glorious hand bursts forth, and then a new chart is shown. And probably Joyce had his own chart for Finnegan's Wake, like he did for Ulysses. So he's referring to the way he was temporarily organizing his work.
Oh, sure. So, I mean, he had lots of charts.
Yeah. Have you ever seen pictures of his manuscript where he has lines drawn all over talking about Kenner interconnections, he has lines drawn all over the place, you know, connecting the third sentence with the 25th sentence, you know? It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Talk about a maelstrom on the page. He was trying to trace out the maelstrom.
Yeah, no question about it.
In Catholic humanism, we have discovered how to create culture. That's what he says. Well, we know how to make culture. And the main medium of society used was the agency for creating a culture. So he saw the key. But then they sped up into this technology that became autonomous, you know, the tech body. So what's really funny is that on our show, we'll be talking to Ion, and all of a sudden, Ion's tone will change. And people who are regular listeners know what's happening. They said, wait a minute, the tech body's talking now, right? And the tech body sheepishly admits, yes, you've caught us. So we tell them, get the hell off there, get out of Ion, and we bring Ion back. Which is unbelievable form, you know, the cliche of doing mediumship, wherever it's done, little corners here and there. I don't know if there's many radio shows, but we are doing, quote, mediumship there. And then we have this battle within the content of the medium. That's never been known before. And so I see McLuhan helps me understand this. Pluralizing. That's what we got here. Pluralizing.
So I was just looking up the etymology of chart.
Yeah.
Because I thought that that might be helpful in this context. So a chart is originally a map for the use of navigators, from the French charte, meaning a card, and which comes from charta in Latin, meaning paper or a map.
What was the last word? It came from a knot. I didn't get the last one syllable.
Latin charta, meaning paper or a map.
So that's visual space, you know. And, you know, the semantics guy, what they say, general semantics, the map is not the territory, you know, that stuff.
Yeah. So it's related to the word card.
Right.
It goes back to the word card, into playing cards. And so...
The tarot and the
exactly.
Kabbalah
stuff.
Exactly.
I was just going to say the tarot.
Yeah.
It's related to role playing. The person who makes the chart and what is charted are both roles.
Yes.
So
you
have
the
I
Ching. So these are pre-literate iconography. That was a way of organizing experience before you got into writing.
Absolutely. Yeah, so it's back to the collective unconscious. It's back to the social unconscious and to language.
Yeah. Yeah, and they started to need to chart it. In a way, it started laws of it, cycles, patterns of it were repeated. So then, oh, okay, we know that pattern, so let's make a little picture of that pattern. And astrology probably comes out of that, and astronomy maybe.
Yeah, it could be. And you can see that the in all of these things that we're talking about, is pattern recognition. But the constellations are a pattern.
Yeah.
The particular tarot card is a pattern. But then the constellations move relative to each other, and the cards get played in different orders. So you the
The
you
gods,
have
they
like
hop from one constellation to another.
that's right. And so you have what you have pattern recognition squared.
Yeah.
And
Now you
the
have
quest.
the Marconi galaxy, the Gutenberg galaxy, and the digital galaxy, and Epstein hops from one to another like a modern super angel god that we
Yeah.
saw in the
Well, you
sky.
could. Yeah. So I mean, human beings were sort of you could say first dimensional characters. History was a question of different constellations, different pattern recognitions that supplanted each other over time.
Yeah.
But now instead of being supplanted by one another over time, they've become layered at the same time.
Yeah.
And the question is, is human being possible when the you could say when the dimensionality changes like that? And we don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, so that's Ion's main point. Today it's going to get so intense that you either commit suicide, die, or ascend. And what ascending is pretty vague, and it's ongoing what the definition of that is. But basically, Ion says the human form is not appropriate anymore. So we're making a new form somehow, and we're not encouraged to grab onto the tech body and give all your power to the tech body and just become a passive servant of all the services that the tech body will give you. That's not a cool way, Ion says. So Ion represents trying to be in any environment to the inevitable consuming of us by the tech body, which will be interpreted by many people as a great, comfortable paradise. It's the, what is that, Brave New World? They were on Soma. That's a very primitive image, but the passivity that people are being forced into, if you get on a guaranteed income and then they just zoom around, or I don't know if they leave their home, but
Yeah,
maybe.
probably not.
What?
Probably not.
Yeah.
It's like you were saying before, they just sit in the living room.
Yeah, they go into their matrix tube. So
Yeah.
that is, Ion is not for that. So it's trying to encourage us not to
Right.
depend too much on technology, on the tech body's services it's more and more offering.
So find out for next time, what ascending
Yeah.
has to do with Heraclitus's the way up is the way down.
Okay, let me just write that down. I have my page with my Ion questions. So, ascension via Heraclitus, up and down, is that what you said?
Yeah, the way up is the way down is one of his fragments.
Oh yeah, okay.
Right.
Heraclitus is
Hodos anokato mia kai oto is the Greek. And it's one of the two epigraphs of the Wasteland.
yeah, right. Okay, so I have your ascension via Heraclitus's quote, "The way up is the way down."
Correct.
How does
Yeah.
Ion respond to that? Oh,
And
that's a
it
good
might
one.
have to do with your wife because the Greek words for the way up and the way down is hodos ano, which we have in anode or analysis, and the way down is holos kato, which we have in catalytic or words like that. So
are you thinking of anode and cathode?
Yeah, those are those are words derived from anode and kato in Greek.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is that those have to do with your products in the sense that they introduce questions of analysis and synthesis.
Right. And a woman who's very involved promoting cold fusion, I've known her a long time, so she dropped back in after almost 10 years of doing her own thing. And she asked Ion about what's our box of free electricity compared to the Pons and Fleischmann cold fusion. So Ion went into it. And so she heard that, and then I made a little excerpt, and she was re-listening to that, and she wrote to me, what is this that Ion's talking about? Anode flips into cathode? What the fuck? That's what she wrote. That's what she heard.
So that's pure Heraclitus.
Yeah. And I think, thanks for showing me that or mentioning that, because I can bring it up. And then Ion does retrieve lots of archetypes of knowledge way back there. And so the Heraclitian probably gets closer.
But that's the, you could say that this is the hidden impulse of Western civilization, because when Plato is thinking about forms, the cartoon of Plato is that he's talking about something abstract in the air, in the clouds, as Aristophanes said. Plato tried to describe, and what Aristotle did describe, is that the forms are dynamic. And what does dynamic mean? It means that they are expressive, that they reach out from themselves, right? So this is like McLuhan talking about extensions, right? The hidden spur of Western civilization is the notion of dynamic, the notion of the forms of things are inherently expressive, inherently extending themselves.
Is that the word entelechies? The entelechy of something? The expression of the form?
Well, it's telos is the end.
Yeah.
Right? So the entelechy is the reaching out of something towards its end.
Okay.
So you're right that it's certainly related to this, but the dynamic is, you could say, is more basic than that. It's a reaching out that belongs to the form. So if you think it just about chemistry for a minute, carbon as an element is a form that has its own laws and has its own place in Mendeleev's table, but it's also stuff. And it belongs to the chemical element carbon to reach out of itself to be graphite or a diamond or any one of the proteins that are involved in human being.
Yeah.
So this dynamic that exists, when Heraclitus says the way up is the way down, he's saying that there's a dynamic to things which is always there. And so then Plato and Aristotle are thinking about that dynamic and realizing the potentials that are involved in dynamicism, then sort of generates all of Western civilization. That's what we've been living through for 2,500 years.
Yeah. And you mentioned pulse in there. Remember, on page 115, electronic pulse grabber was a phrase I put in there. I don't know where I got it from. But what do you call that process? If you take your hands, you start flowing your hands around each other. What is that xylophonic? What is that word that I'm saying that you're showing? Your dynamic image is the, it's not a xylophone, but it's close to that. It's a spiraling in on itself. It's a, that's a term. You can't think of it.
Cyclonic?
No, not cyclonic. I'm just going to try approximation. So,
yeah, if you look up synonyms.
Yeah. No, that didn't work. It's a word I use all the time. I just can't get it. You know, it's a geometric shape that's turning in on itself. I keep thinking it begins with the letter X or Z. Nope, ain't there. So, I think we'll end with that impasse.
Okay. Yeah, we can think about that word for next time.
Yeah.
It
will suddenly come to me or you.
There is, isn't there a word that starts with ZY?
Yeah, that's what I thought. I did XY, ZY, xylogram or something, a zoetrope. It's a term we all know.
Yeah.
But can't get it right now. So let's, it's about time we hit the wall.
Yeah.
We're speeding along too fast there.
Yeah, but that was good. I enjoyed a lot of what you had to say, so thank you.
Yeah, no, that was great. And thanks for responding. So we certainly came up with a whole interesting dissertation on Epstein. That was new.
Right. Yes, sir. Yeah, Epstein is one of those crazy machines that Hugh Kenner was describing.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. Now that's the interconnecting of what we do, what we live. Okay, thank you very much, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, Bob. Thanks.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Cameron.